General Motors on Safari. Here is adventure. Excitement. And danger. Bringing you the African bushveld of today and yesterday in dramatized fact, fiction, and true life documentary. General Motors on Safari.
A few weeks ago, I got into conversation with a man by the name of Colin Hunt. I was drinking in a Cape Town bar on this occasion, and there was a view of the sea and quite a wind, and the waves were white-topped, and it made you cold and glad of an overcoat just to watch them. Anyway, I began talking with Hunt, the way you often do in bars, and he asked me what my interests are, what I do to earn my bread, and so on. He grinned when I told him I spend a great deal of my time looking for stories, smelling them out, often in most unlikely places. "Wonder if you'd be interested in mine," he murmured, and ordered another round. It looked like turning into quite a session, so I declined the brandy he offered and suggested a trip back to my hotel where we might order a spot of dinner into the bargain. Colin Hunt had an extraordinary story to tell. The events I'm going to describe to you tonight, with his help, occurred in a country we hear little of these days, Sierra Leone. I've called Colin's story Visitors on a Late Sierra Afternoon. Enjoyed a fine meal together that night and retired to my room around 9 o'clock. A rather ancient waiter, known personally to me over a number of years, brought brandy and liqueurs. We sat upon a small balcony, surrounded by one of those miscellaneous collections of potted plants and creeper things that hotel proprietors the world over seem to delight in covering otherwise pleasant balconies in. Hunt caressed his brandy goblet, lifted it, allowed some of the golden liquid to run into his mouth, and then placed the glass in front of him again. He looked out into the darkness, over the twinkling lights to where the sea was. He was quite still for about a minute. I wondered when the story was to begin, and to break the stillness, lethargy almost, that had descended upon us, I lighted a cigarette, perhaps with unnecessary vigour.
I'm a cocoa man, you know. I took over a rice plantation back in the 20s. Rolled up my sleeves, reorganized the soil. Got it to do what I wanted it to do, and put in cocoa. Rice erodes the soil, you know, in the uplands. Now, southeastern province is the richest in Sierra Leone. Diamonds scattered around in the drainage system of the Sawar. Plenty of wild palms further south. Is there any place in the country where you can still find traces of the really big forests? Anyway, there I was, sitting pretty after a few years' hard work. Cocoa, a lovely crop. I got the plantation cheaper, you know. Pretty run down it had been. Apparently the original owners had decided they'd had enough and they just pushed off one night. Never seen again. At least as far as anyone knows. Anyway, the night it all happened, I was sitting on the stoop, fooling around with a mouth organ. I like to pretend that I can play sometimes when I'm feeling nostalgic. I've never married. I prefer the bachelor's freedom. I like to look around and know that the limit of my personal horizons, well, unlimited. I miss kids, of course, miss the softness of a woman. But then you can't have your cake and eat it too. I've been sitting there in the evening for a long time. It was one of those nights when I was filled with a lot of sadness. Don't ask me why. I don't know what made me look towards the garage, but I did. And there he stood, Philip Milton. Although, of course, I didn't know his name at first. He was standing quite still, looking at me. After a second or two, he looked at the truck in my saloon standing outside the garage, and then he looked back at me. We both spoke at the same time, as it turned out.
Hello, what can I do for you?
Where did you spring from?
Sorry there was no one here to meet you. We were all down in the valley cutting up some of the dead stuff for the fires. It's getting awfully cool here these nights. I'm Philip Milton.
He held out his hand at this point. I was a little confused. I was about to ask him what he meant by saying that he was sorry there'd been no one to meet me, when he continued.
We found another cotton tree fort. Those early Mendes must have been pretty frightening, worse by far than the Zulus. Come on in, please. I'll get you some liquid refreshment. Anne and Dave will be up in
Mr. Milton, I... Hang on, Mr. Milton.
Funny. Where's Juju? Come in, won't you? The others are a long time. Lucky I elected to run back. Actually, I came for a small cart affair we have up here. Awfully useful for carting wood about. Look, come on in, won't you? I'll pour you a drink and then pop back. We've had the very devil of a time with servants, you know. We had a capital boy here called Fergus. He hiked off to... That's funny.
I had followed him into the house, into my house. He was behaving like no other guest that I'd ever entertained before. On the contrary, he played host to me, strode over the threshold, making expansive gestures with his hands. Large hands, when I remember. He walked across the room, across to the window, one of those large hands suddenly motioned as if to pick up something in the corner. He half stooped as he did this. He was talking to me most of the time. When he stopped, he sort of looked upset, puzzled.
Some bounders moved the drink. I'll murder, Dave. Can't their furniture in the same place for more than 2 days?
Look, Mr. Milton, I really think...
Look, sorry, old chap, I haven't even asked your name. You're staple fodder, weren't you? Where the devil have you come from, incidentally? Where...
He was looking round the room now, and something was upsetting him. He turned a full circle, turned twice, and took several steps towards the bedroom. Suddenly he was no longer the sharp, self-assured young man who'd materialized out of the dusk while I played my mouth organ badly. Suddenly he was... what? Even now, although I see his face as clearly as I see yours, I cannot for the life of me describe Philip Milton. Nor can I explain his malady. There was something wrong with him. Very wrong.
Something queer's going on, though. How long did you say you've been here? That your vehicle out there? Sounds ridiculous,
Milton,
I know.
Forgive me, but I don't quite understand what you're doing here.
But you've been playing around with the jolly old furnishings, hmm? I beg your pardon, old boy.
I said I'm not quite sure what... Look, I mean, what do you want here?
I'm sorry, want here? I live here.
You live here?
Yes, I live here. Look, hang on, will you? Please, just a minute. Look, before we go any further, what's your name?
He was regarding me as if I was just a little mad now. He was tensed, as if at any moment he expected me to spring at his throat. Why, in heaven's name, he'd rung the old bell, I couldn't imagine. The bell was brass. It weighed about 7.5 pounds. It had stood in that corner for nearly a decade. It was there when I'd taken over the plantation. I'd never even moved it. It had never even been polished. I told him my name.
Colin Hunt. Pleased to meet you. Freetown?
Well, originally I...
We don't get many visitors out here. The others will be back in a short while. We'll fetch the Ballywood tomorrow. I wish the devil I knew where some drink was. I mean, the whole belly cabinet.
And then Philip Milton stared round the room. He looked a little frightened. He shook his head, closed his eyes for an instant, and then opened them wide again and stared searchingly at me. By now I decided that he was mad. He'd evidently made up his mind that I was too, because he slowly backed away from me, a sort of fixed smile upon his face. I was unarmed, but the gun cabinet was close. I wandered over to it. At that very moment, he dived almost across the room.
Look, old son. Look, are you a friend of Dave's? Well, I killed the old so-and-so. He always did have a peculiar sense of humour. Where the devil's the gun cabinet?
And then he seemed to catch sight of the open cupboard containing my rifles. I stood only partly obscuring it.
What?
Please sit down, will you? Now, look, what do you want here? Is there something wrong? Is there? Where have you come from?
Look, if this
please
is
sit down.
You've done awfully well. Well, it's all jolly eerie, in fact. Look, when the blazes did you do all that to the ceiling? And the walls. It's an awful mess.
Mr. Milton, exactly what do you want here? I mean, you didn't come by car or anything. I didn't see you.
Look, I'm a bit bored with all this now. You staying the night? I'm sorry, but I think Dave might say. And what the devil's been going on with the room?
All right, you reprobate. I think you're very funny. Now come on in and show me where you put the bloody drink. Why didn't you keep this mad monster of yours in check?
There were questions that I wanted to ask. Obvious questions, such as, who was this man Milton? Where had he come from? Who were his friends? What had he meant by striding around my home as if he owned it? Every time I attempted to formulate one of those questions, he did something. Something incomprehensible. Or he questioned me. To an onlooker, one of us must have appeared mad. And I was darn sure then that it wasn't me. And suddenly I was aware of the silence. There'd been a man and a girl. They were approaching the veranda at one moment and the next, no one. I turned quickly, meaning to arm myself. It's strange. One always expects burglars to be savage, not Eton and possibly Balliol.
Evening, Mr. Hunt. Phil tells me you're here to see us, that you play the mouth organ tolerably well. Trouble is, you've been playing the fool, rather, around the old homestead, haven't you? Do you mind telling us why? No? Please don't jump about, old boy. I've a revolver in my pocket. I shall wound you, I swear, and that'd be a tragedy, because it's all just a practical joke, I'm sure.
He wore a tattered bush jacket. He was tall, fair-haired, inordinately good-looking. The faded shorts were, in fact, kept up with an old Etonian tie. He was burnt by the Sierra Leone sun. The hair appeared slightly ridiculous upon his head. It was almost white. Listen, I don't know who you are, any of you. I'd like to offer you my hospitality, but I must insist that you sit down and stop threatening me. I've no idea what you're talking about, but it would seem as if you're the ones that are playing the jokes.
Dave! All our things have gone. It's all...
All what?
What's he done with everything? What have you done with everything?
Watch the bunder a minute, Phil. If he tries to get out, hit him, will you?
I repeat, when you finish leaping about my house as if
this is some splendid new trick, you're succeeding admirably in puzzling us. But so that I can ascertain how successful you're going to continue to be, I think you'd better explain just...
One joke. Misfire. Now we all laugh. Please explain, and then we'll drink. And talk of compensation for the disgusting way in which you decorated our walls.
He couldn't have done all this since we only left at 9. We've only been away 8 hours. Where's Willie and Minor? Minor! Where's Juju gone too? Look, something nasty's going on. I don't like it, Dave. I've had a headache.
All you left? Left where at 9 o'clock? You don't mean...
We left here at 9. Where else?
You weren't here at 9 o'clock. This morning...
How would you know? You weren't here?
I... Listen, this is my Coco estate. My name's Hunt. Colin Hunt.
Coco?
This is Kayalala Wanja. It means in Mende, place of wild palms growing. Ancient name because there aren't any palms left this far up now. But we like the name. This young lady is Anne Stewart, my wife. I'm David Stewart. You've met Philip Milton. We grow rice most unsuccessfully. We're really rather ruined, but we can't bear the thought of leaving.
It was a good refuge from the war anyway. Dave and I were frightful cowards.
Kitchener was most put out. Searched for us everywhere. I think you'd better tell us where the devil you've come from and who you are, because I'm beginning to suspect that you're up to no good.
Suddenly, I didn't know why then, I began to feel very afraid. Afraid's not the word. I felt as if I was being buried alive. Fiction writers talk of a shiver running up the spine, a prickly sensation under or on the scalp, or some other wretched imaginary thing. Imagine it, maybe. But I felt all those things that night, and about 100 other sensations as well. I suddenly felt it imperative to state my case, my claim to my plantation. I told them when I'd come and the work I'd done. They listened patiently, glancing secretively at one another occasionally. It was clear that they did not believe me. And then I began to understand who was mad. I decided it was I.
Well, that's a frightfully interesting story. It's all the most dreadful fabrication, of
fabrication,
course,
but... my dear sir. You're sitting in my house on my plantation. I've been here since 25, and I've worked here...
25?
He's my dream man from a future age. Darling, it's Mr. H.G. Wells.
That fool. Listen, my friend...
He's not a fool. He's devastating. But what's happened to the house? You must have hundreds of people to help you. Where are they?
I'd like my heads back too, old boy.
Head? What heads?
Our very splendid leopard, the elephant, and the largest dwarf buffalo ever shot in Sierra. That had better not be damaged, or I shall shoot you, Mr. Hunt, and put you up there on the wall. All right, over. That's enough. Confess, my friend, otherwise I'm going to knock your head off. The secret of being a successful practical joker is to know when to end the jolly old shape. All right?
It's 1919. They've just formed a jolly interesting mess called the League of Nations. The poor old Habsburgs are...
1919? Look, you might be trying to drive me mad or something, but if you'll allow me to, well, to rise for a moment. Look at this. November the 17th, 1935. An ugly old so-and-so, isn't he? Silly little moustache. I shouldn't think anything will come of it, though. Mind you, he's building up the German forces again. And here, the Versailles Treaty is worth just about nothing as far as he's concerned.
David!
November the...
It's real, isn't it?
Freetown? November 7.
Mr. Hunt... You've laid elaborate plans. You must have friends. Friends who are responsible for helping you do this to the house. I'm impressed. The newspaper, it's awfully good and everything, but it's gone on long enough, don't you think? Where are your friends? Let's all have a drink, shall we?
I think I need a drink more than anything else. I hope the trophies are safe, Mr. Milton. The dwarf buff is very valuable. We shot the little pygmy elephant right up on the border. We are proud of him.
Eaton, Mr. I'm sorry, I didn't quite catch your surname. What was it again?
Eaton, yes. You?
Yes.
Yeah?
1912 till 1919.
Oh, you're quite mad, of course. You must be at least 40, old son. Bit old for the old place, aren't you?
David Stewart?
Yes.
It can't. And then I was very afraid. Stewart was, I suppose, a man of about 25 or 26. He couldn't possibly have been more. But suddenly I knew when I'd seen those outrageously good looks before. David Stewart, 19.9. The record for the 100 yards, 10.1. You got 9th rate against Harrow. You made 183 not out in 2 hours against... Your ruddy photograph was all over the upper house walls. I know you. Stewart started to smile, and then it seemed he changed his mind. He looked at the paper in Milton's hand, snatched at it, but nobody spoke until the woman saw the telephone.
Look. Where did you get that?
It's a rotten service. I can get Freetown about once a year and Beau every other day. David Stewart walked over to the telephone. He picked up the cable and traced it to its power point. I was proud of that phone. I was one of the first, that far from Bow, the southeastern province's capital. Yes, proud of the phone, despite its frightfully poor service. And then Stewart walked slowly to the electric light switch. I'd plugged the whole box of tricks on at about 4 o'clock that afternoon. The hum of my very rickety home-manufactured generator hadn't been apparent before that. I was a pioneer. They'd laughed at me in Beau. The natives regarded me as a wizard. And suddenly I wondered where my blasted staff was. Where were Sulima and Peter? Where was the cook and Loco Loco, the half-witted jack-of-all-jobs, master not even half of one? And then David Stewart found the archaic light switch.
Merciful heavens, what?
1935, oh yes, I was a pioneer of Africa, all right. Telephone, a diabolical line for sure, but a telephone. The light? Well, the generator collapsed twice a week, but it provided a dullish, flickering electric light. My plantation was a couple of decades ahead of its time. 1935. But what year did these three people think it was, for pity's sake?
Dave, something's happened. Something queer, I...
More drink, gentlemen. I'm sorry, Mrs. Stewart.
We went down into the valley. I remember going down into the valley. We found the dead wood. You sharpened the axe, Dave. They said the sky was getting cloudy and we might have rain. We didn't have rain. Did we? No, we didn't have rain. You sharpened the axe. The sun went in for a little while and you chopped at the tree and the axe went in a deep, long way. And I remember I had a headache. We didn't chop any wood. Not any at all. Why did you come up here for the cart, Philly?
Cart? I came for the cart. For the wood.
We went for the wood and you hit the tree hard. I remember, because it seemed as if lots and lots of axes hit lots and lots of other trees. All across and over the valley. And I remember a jar-jar bird shrieked and flew fast away as if it was hurt. Beautiful bird with red and yellow feathers. 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 Beautiful bird with red and yellow feathers.
That is my story.
Well, what about these young people? I mean, what...
I couldn't stop them. They got up and walked out.
Walked?
Through the door, out onto the veranda, down the steps, I presume they...
But didn't you follow or...
No.
But surely...
Because while the girl was talking, one of the men, Philip Milton, I think it was, he got up and went to have a look at my famous electric light cable and switch. And as I said, it was poor in those days, it flickered, but it was good enough to show me something that frightened me a great deal. And when I noticed this thing about Milton... I saw that it was so with the others, too.
What thing?
In the room with the electric light and the curtains not drawn and the dark outside, mm-hmm. These three people didn't have any shadows. I didn't sleep that night, just sat there drinking brandy. The next morning I went down into the valley. I didn't know what I was looking for until I found it. In a big, dead cotton tree, I discovered an old, rusted axe. It was nearly 5 inches in the wood. Needed a strong man with big hands to do that. It had been there for a long, long time. It was as if, in 1919, three people went to collect wood and never came back until 16 years later. As if time caught, like the corner of a sports coat on a nail, and ruptured.
Beautiful bird with red and yellow feathers. Red and yellow feathers.
Join us again next week for another story of the African Bushbelt. It might be fact, it might be fiction, in General Motors on Safari. Brought to you by General Motors South African, manufacturers of Cadillac, Buick, Oldsmobile, Pontiac, Chevrolet, Beaumont, Vauxhall, Opel, Holden, Bedford, and GMC Motor Vehicles.